Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to a possibly pre-World War III episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me tonight is not Filippo D'Analfo, but we do have Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah, Phil's not with us tonight. He is currently bedridden, and...
I think if he had a message for all of our listeners, it would be, this is not the end of the decade, by the way.
But, yeah, technically... Well, it's the end of the decade, but not the beginning of the next one.
Yeah.
Do you think he took the Buckley's?
Probably.
I think he took the Buckley's.
Yeah, he probably took... I would take the fucking Buckley's.
You know what? That shit grew on me.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyway, so, this episode is for January 3rd, 2020, the first episode of the year. And the first episode of the end of the decade. Again, not the beginning of the next decade. That's next year.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, it might as well be the fucking end of the world because, well, you know, we were kind of going to not really have, like, a major thing to talk about this week other than, you know, a certain event happening down under.
Oh, my.
But then, our president made a pig-headed decision late last night that might be equivalent to the Franz Ferdinand assassination. Might not be.
Maybe.
Maybe. Especially when it's a fucking nuclear power. Yeah, we'll tell you more about it later on. But, suffice it to say, this is either a sign that Trump really does think he's in deep shit now, and this is his desperate attempt to try and, you know, go squirrel, or he really is, like, on, like, the precipice of finally losing it, because, and we will probably talk about this a little later, I am absolutely now 100% convinced, well, 99.9% convinced that he has FTD.
Wow.
Frontotemporal dementia. But if you start seeing him walking with a cane in the next few months, that's basically your sign that, yeah, that is absolutely what this is.
Mm.
But we'll talk about that later on. Anyway, so, on this
Let's
show.
Drink.
Yeah, drink. Yeah, so, on tonight's show, we will be talking about that shit that went down. We'll also be talking about some shit that went down over here on this side of the pond, including the fact that, yeah, our, president is slowly deteriorating right before our eyes.
Not that he had a very good starting point to begin with.
Yeah. We're also reminded that the Olympics are happening in Japan this summer. And, we know that, amongst other things, because of, well, flights will tell you what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether or not we'll actually take up on their offer. Also, a body found in an Idaho cave has been identified. They found it 40 years ago, and they found out who this dude actually was. Some folks in Mexico uncovered what might have been a Mayan palace. And then of course we got a bunch of like, news and media, you know, movie stuff related as well. On top of that, before we, go any further, let's start off as we always do. And since Phil's not here, it's gonna be Pat. So Pat, what have you been up to this week? I mean, I've probably got a good idea, but.
Recuperating.
Yep.
Recuperating from drinking, recuperating from an erratic work schedule.
Yeah.
Recuperating from
2019 in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fuck it. It's easier to just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So, Teresa, what about you?
I have been playing the absolute shit out of Pokemon Sword.
you and about a million other people.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I really do wish Nintendo would get their online shit together. It would help. It's playable, it's enjoyable, but it could be better with max raid battling.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I am at the last gym, and then I'll go on to the cup, and we'll see where it goes from there. You know, I'm glad we went ahead and popped the money and bought it. So.
How would you integrate raids into a traditional Pokemon game?
So there is this place called the Wild Area, and it's a little bit like it takes the place of the Pokemon Safari. So you go out in there, and there are these dens that they call it, and it has a big shaft of light coming out of it. And if it's got the light coming out of it, then there is a Dynamaxed Pokemon in there. And that's where they get, like, Gigantamax and all that. They get real big, and you can mm-hmm. find them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you and three other people can take it down and then catch it, if you're lucky. And you're usually pretty lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But when you call out or when you say, yeah, invite others, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And I think a lot of it, too, is it's got a three-minute timer on it before the battle starts. And if people don't know what they're doing and they don't hit start battle after they choose their Pokemon, then it says, you know, something like cannot communicate with a requester. And so you're trying to go in and respond to they call them cards. Mm-hmm. So they have these cards and it's like, I want to do a raid. And you go and you're like, yeah, I want to do that too. You try to respond to the card. If you can't respond to the requester because there's communication error or whatever, well, you can't play.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wonderful.
Yeah, and some of it could be their problem, but I do think some of it is user issues too. So users really not knowing how to do that. I have only had one where I have been the person initiating the raid. I've only had one so far where I've had three other people actually join me, and at least one of them not being a non-player character. So, but, I mean, it's really a gorgeous game. It really is. And, you know, you're swimming around through the water and a big ass Gyarados comes by and you're like, holy shit! You know, it's cool. It's really cool. And I don't care that, you know, the global, Dex is not included. I really don't. So I think that's pretty much a non-issue for me. It should be a non-issue for a lot more people.
But it isn't because fandom.
Yeah. Yeah, and then this weekend after my kid catches up to where I am gym-wise, I'm going to take his ass down. And I'm not going to go easy on him. I'm going to take him down. Hopefully. He might be better than me. I don't know. Isn't that sad?
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we sat there and binged Letterkenny Season 8. And it was good. It was good. I know there's only one more season left. I want to kind of see how that goes. I think it's going to start with a big old Donnybrook, so that'll be awesome because that's about where it left off. And we've been doing a lot of pot stuff, but not the kind of Illinois pot stuff I'd like to be doing right now. The lines are huge.
Yeah, so as you don't know, weed officially became legal in Illinois on the morning of January 1st.
Yeah, and there were some stats, too, about how much in sales happened. And the very first day of sales, which, of course, was New Year's Day, and people were lined up. It was bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, show me how much it was. It was something like $3.2 billion. I believe that's what the numbers were.
That's like the the GDP of a small country.
It says nearly 3.2 million in legal weed was sold in Illinois on the first day, making one of the strongest showings in history for marijuana legalization. I believe we were only bested by
California.
No.
Yeah.
What's Portland in? Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, had a little geography fail there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the lines are bananas. And the one that's kind of close to my place, the dispensary really doesn't have their whole shit together, so you can't go in there and sniff it before you buy it.
Mm.
So, and the lines are still really crazy. But, Yeah, I'll have to see about maybe going to a different one.
Yeah.
So.
I would like to say that Georgia might be the next state on the docket, but I doubt it.
Yeah. Well, there's a second one that's near
us. We didn't start selling alcohol on Sundays until like 2 years ago. So.
You know, that's not too
bad. The blue laws are fucked.
Yeah, blue laws.
We could do an entire episode on blue laws.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what you were saying.
Oh, about pot? Oh, it's actually, this is the instant pot. It's food related. I'll tell you what, man, we made a really great beef pho.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been a little bit more to be more like the Thai place down the road.
Yeah.
But I think next time we'll use three cinnamon sticks instead. And then we're going to add mint leaves like our local place does.
Okay.
At the end. So a lot of cooking in that thing, which is interesting. It's very interesting. And we were gone for the holidays, and we came back, and we were missing a shrimp out of the fish tank.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think Lord Sashomaru had a snack poo. Yep. There were two shrimp when we left, and only one when we got back.
Two shrimp enter, only one shrimp leave.
I cleaned the tank, I checked the filter and all that. Nope. I think he became an expensive $3.50 snack.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it.
Okay, Chris, what about you?
So, I got a new 4K TV.
Mm-hmm.
Replaced the one I had, with, Christmas money and such that I had from, the holidays. And, got a TCL 50 inch.
How are you liking it?
So far it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
The main problem. The main problem I've had is that I did not, foresee the issues ahead of time and got a new 4K HDMI switcher and cables and all that for my setup. So when I got home, I realized, oh shit. If I want to plug anything to actually use the 4K, I got to essentially unplug it from the switch, into the open HDMI slot in there. So. I have some that are coming, I think, tomorrow. Like, Monoprice is sending them.
Cool.
The switch I got was actually pretty cheap because one is intended for mounting to, like, screw into the wall kind of thing. But I figure it's half the price of the other ones, so I'll just take that one and just not screw it into the wall. It was $33 instead of, like, 70. So I was like, I'll take that. Even if it doesn't look as pretty or anything like that. But yeah, that should work just fine, for what I need. And, got like a nice little bag of like, I think 5-6 foot cables, 4K cables, to go with it. So I'll be able to replace most of the cables that need to be replaced.
Wait, what? Like HDMI cables?
Yeah.
You don't need 4K HDMI cables, do you?
Yeah, it'd be up to the right spec on that. Mine are all from years ago.
Oh, okay.
So all my HDMI cables are out of date, essentially. Except for the two I got recently that are, long ones just for, to make it a little easier to get, over to my monitor. But yeah, that's the one issue, just, especially when I had to stream, is like, oh fuck. Cause I basically used that opportunity to clean up my whole setup, get cables that did not need to be in, that had been from like the Wii and other stuff I had plugged in there that I don't need anymore. So kind of cleaned that up a good bit. The PS4 and Xbox One are now just sitting in front of the TV on my stand here. So now there's not a TV with a giant stand, taking up most of the space. So it makes a little bit more sense. Though the sensor for the remote is right at the bottom of the TV in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of situated between where my PS4 and Xbox One are at.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have to specifically aim the remote instead of, like if it would have been nice they had like a Bluetooth remote. So I could just point it anywhere and not worry about having to point it directly at the TV and having a remote that is no longer like any other TV remote I've had. There's like no number key or anything. It's a Roku remote.
Yeah.
So it just has a D-pad and some buttons on there. It's like, all right, this is going to be weird not having like an input button to just switch easily. I had to back out to the main menu and then switch back over to whichever input I need to go through. So it's a little bit different from basically what I've been doing for the last 10 years. But it'll take some time to get used to that, especially once I get the switcher and all that in here and get that all set up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to specifically set up for streaming or whatnot. Especially during a time where I'm streaming a bunch for the site. But we did finally get the emote approved. I think it was the other day, like 2.5 weeks later. So that should be okay now for people that are subscribed. Just our little broken controller logo. But yeah, what did I stream? I streamed a bunch of stuff. Let's see, I'm gonna look back here for what I've been doing. Where's it at? Okay. I did, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze stream, which was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I did Holiday Hitman 2, which, they put up a bunch of stuff, contracts and such in there for the holidays. Contracts are made by people in the community. There's one especially that's set in Mumbai. In this tower that's under construction, we have to take out a bunch of bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
A la Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty fun. Especially, it has optional objectives for it, so like you can, they want you to push the bad guy off the side of the building. What I ended up doing was just knocking him out and then pushing his body off the side of the building. So it was close enough. That was a lot of fun. I streamed Little Inferno. That was like a holiday game I wanted to stream, which is about burning things in a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
I did 100% run on that, which took about 3 hours in that. This wasn't too mm-hmm. bad. I got through the weird ending that it has.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I streamed some Crossnick Plus, which is 99 cents on the Switch right now. It's a puzzle game. With a bit of a Dreamcast aesthetic to it. And it works out pretty well. Where you're kind of, rotating rows or columns to try to set up, crossing rows and column, that are the same color kind of thing. And it'll throw, as it gets, harder, it throws in obstacles and such in there. I streamed Control. I just picked that up. That game is really fun. I did two streams on that. The New Year stream I did, I played that for about an hour or so, and then played some more Rocket League. I kind of played that until the New Year came, and mm-hmm. that was a lot of fun. Had a much better time than the previous time I streamed Rocket League, where I had like three good matches and it sucked the rest of the night. That one's a lot more successful. I streamed Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast on the PS4,
mm-hmm.
Cause that was on sale and I picked that up. And that holds up pretty well.
Mm.
For a game I had not played before, the only issue is that I started getting nausea later on, about an hour in.
Mm.
Like, either the bobbing is weird, or there's a weird, side aim, like you can lean to the left or right, and it looks fucked up. Like an unnatural motion for what it is. I think that's probably what it was. But you have to hold square, which is the button you're using to pick activate stuff. So you can easily just accidentally hit it and hold it just long enough to start moving it left and right in a weird way. And that started like affecting that. And, yesterday I streamed as like a game of the year stream, celebrating our top 10 going up. I picked up Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Was playing some of that and that game is fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the early stuff where running to your first guy that you can't just kill with a death blow once.
Mm.
That took me a couple times to figure that out, how that all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Then you meet the dude in the field, he just fucking chops your arm off. It's like, alright, mm-hmm. bye, we're taking the kid. Like, well, sure. But that's a lot of fun. It takes a bit getting used to it, especially once they introduce the concept of the dragon rot.
Mm-hmm.
For really dying too much.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point you get the ability to revive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
For a second chance. And I was taking on another guy that needed two death blows to take out. And I was not doing too well against him. Just like, wore me back and showed me like the cutscene that, where you meet the guy again. That is, building all the Buddha statues.
Mm-hmm.
That was all weird.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's good. It's just hard as hell. I got to the flashback scene.
Yeah.
That's where I ended up on. Which is where it starts picking up, where I'm actually making some progress.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And kind of dealing with people around there. But yeah, so far so good on that, and that's been pretty much it on the streaming stuff. We're kind of going back to our regular schedule now, so won't be streaming, you know, 4 days in a row anymore.
So you can actually get some sleep, yeah?
Yeah.
Sleep's no problem, it's just having to figure out what the fuck I'm going to stream.
Yeah.
For 4 days in a row is a little bit tough. I was thinking about getting, like, Fire Emblems, like, that's going to be way too slow, because the early part of that game is going to be just talking
yeah.
And dumb tutorials, like, here's how you move. It's like, I've played enough of these, I don't need you to tell me what to do. Just tell me what the new stuff is. And, so I picked up Sekiro instead. It's like, that'll be more entertaining. Let's see, I've been watching some stuff on Netflix. I finished up the Witcher series.
How was that? Everybody's really buzzing.
It's really good.
It's good. It is really fucking good.
It's really gory. Especially when Yennefer does what they do to Yennefer for her transformation.
Oh yeah.
That's super fucked up when I've mentioned to people.
Yeah.
I tell them like, you know what they do in Game of Thrones? This is worse.
Yeah.
this is worse than anything they've done in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Even the torture stuff.
Yeah. Also tits. Lots and lots of tits.
Yeah. No, I told them, there's no dicks, unfortunately. So it's one side.
No wiener, flopping wieners, flopping wieners. Nope, none of those.
It's not equal opportunity nudity.
No.
And Henry Cavill's great as Geralt.
Oh yeah.
Set the voice down and all that. And yeah, it kind of ends pretty well. Curious to see where that goes from there, but they're setting it up for, the three main characters to get together.
Mm-hmm.
Yennefer and Geralt.
Yep.
Have met up and, done the business. But now they're, so the show is very, set into Nilfgaard trying to take over everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of the overarching theme there.
Which was already the sort of overarching of a good chunk of the Witcher book series.
Yeah.
They don't, of course, by the time you actually get into the games, Nilfgaard then actually starts their invasion in earnest and basically occupy the whole country.
Yeah.
But that's later on.
Yeah, the one issue is that there's some of the scenes they're showing are not happening at the same time. There's some good sections of it that are happening at different times, so kind of try to line up everything, which they kind of start doing at the end. Lining things up so you're like, okay, that stuff happened well before this other stuff that you're seeing. So there's a little bit of confusion at first. Once you realize like, oh, this early stuff with Geralt is well before what you're seeing with Ciri.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But it's good so far.
That's partly due to the fact that, you know, the first two books in the Witcher series were short story collections, so.
Yeah, a lot of that early stuff.
The timeline's kind of all over the place.
The adventures of Geralt and, Yaskil.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a great part of the crew.
Oh yeah.
Especially later on when I saw a good joke on Twitter. It's, let's see if I can find it. I just saw it. Oh yeah, Geralt. I'm Yaskir's, emergency contact doctor, so you're here to pick him up. Geralt, no, I'm here to be removed as his emergency contact. That's basically a lot of their interactions, in the first season. It's like, I don't really want you here. He's like, but I'm a bard. I can help you, drum up business for you.
To be fair, that's their interactions on the games too.
Yeah. But yeah.
I'm afraid if I watch this, I'm going to get that game that we bought with our used PS4, and I'm going to never come back up for air.
Which one?
Witcher 3.
I actually bought that last night. It's on sale for like $15 on PSN. So. Mm.
Yeah.
And that gets you the game and all the DLC. So.
Yeah, this was like some definitive collection or something. I don't know.
Yep. And the DLC is like, the DLCs individually are like the length of Witcher 2. So, yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and you can just play those DLC if you want.
Yep. Is anyone at all surprised that we're so stoked for Cyberpunk 2077?
No.
But yeah.
But anyway, as you were saying.
I ended up playing, some Witcher 3 too.
Yeah.
Starting it over again, cause I don't know where.
Why not?
Also I realized I was not that far in. Cause I got, like within about 3 or 4 hours, I was already further than where I was at, which is actually taking down the Griffin, and
mm-hmm.
going over to, whatever kingdom you're at, it's with, Yennefer,
mm-hmm.
To get a mission to go get Ciri. Like that was more than I had done previously when I tried to play it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was partly because I remember doing some mission where you were trying to, a guy claimed he had been ransacked in the swamps, whatever it was, and you went to go chasing after him once you realize he's been fucking with you. We happened to stop near a group of wolves. And so while I was talking to them, they were like trying to attack me, and as soon as it ends, they just kill me. It was like some weird bug where they were somehow able to keep attacking me and I couldn't do anything about it. Now I'm in a better position with that. Also watched John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch, I think it's called.
Yeah.
The news special he's put out. It's not a comedy special. It is basically him doing a series of skits with these kids. And it's a lot of it's musical stuff.
Oh.
Which is still pretty hilarious because he talks about, it's a little bit like Sesame Street, but, as presented by John Mulaney. Even so much like talking about, this big puppet friend of the kids, I guess. And then him telling them like, oh, or showing the image on the screen of, you know, remembering, you know, the actor that played him. Like he's like, wait, what happened to him? It's like, oh, nobody told you. Kind of thing. Having to go through the notion of telling the kids like this, the person that played the character they loved was dead. Kind of thing. But there's a lot of other funny skits of, one where you're talking about his, I guess his grandfather died. So his grandma was a widow and had found a new boyfriend. And his aunts all hated him for trying to inadvertently trying to replace their dad kind of thing. But he loved his mom's boyfriend or his grandma's boyfriend. And so it's this whole song of his kid form singing this song about, his grandma's boyfriend. It's pretty hilarious.
That's funny.
And there's some different guest stars he gets on it, like Richard Kind and some others. And it ends on a really great bit with, Jake Gyllenhaal playing a character called Mr. Music, who is essentially doing a song about there's music in everything. Every attempt he tries to make music out of ordinary objects, it's all silent stuff. He gets increasingly frustrated and then, goes crazy by the end. It's all hilarious stuff. It's a great show. Definitely watch it. And I watched the second season of Carol and Tuesday, or the second part of season one of Carol and Tuesday. It's some really good stuff. It's the show that is directed by the director of Cowboy Bebop and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Watanabe.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they do a really good job with this season. It's gotten past the big Mars Brightest show that's their equivalent of, like, American Idol. But for people on Mars, and they're kind of trying to continue their music career as it's kind of just starting. And in the background, they kind of tie into this political race for the president of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
That is centered around Tuesday's mom is the one politician, and she is increasingly becoming very Trump-like. with her politics of being anti-immigrants, especially Earth immigrants to Mars, illegal immigrants especially. That all plays ahead at the end where they have kind of a really cool performance with a lot of the big stars you've seen throughout the first season. It's very much kind of like a We Are the World kind of thing, but done really well. It's a really good show. People should definitely check it out if they're into like a music anime. It's a bit more pop music stuff, but a lot of weird shit in there too.
Especially
in that first season.
Alright.
And that's been pretty much it. It's fucking winter, but not really because it's climate change.
It really isn't. It's disconcerting.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Which makes me think that next year's winter is going to be even colder than the one we had the previous year.
I don't know.
But, anyway.
Yeah.
Then again, I live in the South, and winter is, like, really janky.
Yeah.
It doesn't know if it wants to be here or not.
It's mostly rain.
Yeah, just a lot of rain. We haven't gotten snow in forever here.
Yeah, we had a few inches on New Year's Eve.
Well, that's just so good for you, isn't it?
No, not really, because it came down as like a blizzard at first, so it just got really slick for a little while, then...
Oh, was it crazy windy, too?
At parts, yeah.
Okay.
But then, weirdly enough, it melted, and then the salt truck came after that, and it's like, you are way too late, dude. And then they put down, like, I guess not enough salt, because then it started going back down again later on.
And that's what was made?
Yep. And then it was... time to go, so I was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I was like, anyway. Not to worry about this anymore. Then it got warm and all that melted again, and that's where we're at.
Yeah. Alright, anyway, so yeah, my turn. So I made out like a bandit for Christmas this year. I got both Jedi Fallen Order and The Outer Worlds.
Nice.
For Christmas. Nice. I've already finished Jedi Fallen Order. Not terribly long game, but then again, it's also a lot of fun, so it goes by very fast.
Yeah.
So now I've been playing The Outer Worlds mostly, and that game is fucking hilarious. It is one of the funniest goddamn games I've encountered in a long time. And it's funny in just all many kinds of ways. It's funny haha, it's funny smart, and it's funny God, this is too close to reality. Yeah. I'm not too far in the game right now. I'm currently on that space station that's like, where like all of the corpos sort of have like a lot of their offices there. And, I ran into the Spacer's Choice dude that, you know, wears the mascot head. And see, one of the things about the world of The Outer Worlds is that everyone who works for one of these companies has like a standard like arsenal of slogans that they have to use whenever they talk to someone. So it's always like they're saying it, but they're saying it just so they can get it out and get it over with. But the problem with the dude with the Spacer's Choice is that's pretty much all he says until you finally get to the point in the conversation where he's like, look, I'm talking to the dude underneath the mask. Are you okay? And he basically says, I don't know. I think it's become a part of me now. it's a great game. It's a lot of fun. It's very funny. It's kind of janky because it's an Obsidian game. And, but otherwise than that, it's a lot of fun. So other than that, Netflix, and yeah, of course, I've been watching The Witcher too. It's damn good. And fuck, I've been watching something else too, I forgot what it was. But, other than that, books, you know, I've been reading probably what is one of the most entertaining sci-fi novels I've read in a long time, and it's old as fuck, so I'm surprised I hadn't read it before. It's Dream Park by Larry Niven and Stephen Barnes. kind of considered to be one of the books that helped kickstart LARPing as we know it. It's basically the whole sort of like idea behind the book is there's like this theme park that has like, you know, the regular theme park stuff, but primarily it does these really high-tech LARPing sessions, that uses like projections and actors and everything. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it.
Would that be okay for a 12-year-old girl?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I will pass that along.
Yeah. Other than that, Vivzy Pop stuff. I am 100% a Vivzy Pop slut now because, I watched Has Been Hotel. And for those you don't know, Vivzy Pop has done Has Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss. She also did Holidays, which was the holiday short she did. And, I friended her on Twitter now and yep, I'm in it for the long haul.
Yeah, kid's been trying to sneak in Has Been Hotel.
You should watch it. It's good.
Yeah, we probably should.
You should. And then Hell of a Boss, because Hell of a Boss is all hilarious. And because Brandon Rogers co-wrote and stars in it. So it's funny as hell. But yeah, just be careful because once it sucks you in, you will never leave.
we finished later, Kenny, which you didn't watch with us, but yeah. Yeah.
There's only like one episode of these things. It's like because they're pilots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can watch them in one sitting if you wanted to. Not that that's going to do anything because you will be sucked in forever. But anyway. So with that said, do we have anything else we want to mention before we move on?
No.
No? No. All right. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, you know, because Phil's out and we're kind of doing it semi-informally, I thought I'd do another food one. And what better way to do a food one than all of the weeby trash that we are, and do something about Japanese food. So let's do something about Japanese food, right?
Okay.
Specifically, I want to talk about one little branch of Japanese food. So when you think Japanese food, what usually pops into your head? It's usually something like, sushi,
yakisoba.
Ramen, yakisoba, stuff like that, right?
Yukimon.
Yeah, so stuff like that in Japanese cooking is called washoku, which means traditional Japanese cuisine. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm going to be talking about tonight. Instead, I'm going to be talking about the other side, which is yoshoku, which is basically basically translates into Western food, which the thing is, it's not actually like these are considered to be non-Japanese now, but they were basically inspired by like all of the Western stuff that they came in contact with, basically around the time of the Meiji Restoration.
Oh God, it's going to be fried pickles, isn't it?
No. No, that's not in here.
Okay.
Thank God. But, no, so everybody knows how sort of the Meiji Restoration went. Basically, Commodore Perry showed up with his gunships off the shores of Japan, basically convinced them to say, yo, open up the country. And so they did, and that ultimately broke down the whole shogunate system, and then the sort of rising up of the emperor being the chief power of the country again. And then that, of course, all came with Emperor Meiji. And amongst the things that they wanted to do was to open up the country to not just, you know, trade, but also to food as well. And basically what that happened is that all of the sort of small amount of Western exposure they had at that point, they then sort of ended up adopting into their own local cuisine. And some of these are things now that are considered, like, extremely traditional Japanese now, but they've only been a part of the Japanese diet for about 200 years or so, maybe.
Okay.
All right, so we'll probably start with one that It's like one of the most popular things in Japan, and that's curry.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese curry, or kare, and especially curry raisu. Yeah, so you guys know what curry is, right?
Oh, yes.
Tasty, tasty shit. And, of course, curry originally comes from where?
India.
India, yeah. Well, that's not how the Japanese came into contact with it. No, the curry they came into contact with was the stuff that the British were making. Because once, you know, the British ships started showing up, and, you know, curry had been a part of naval rations for a few decades by that point, you know, because of, you know, the British Raj and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up introducing it to the Japanese, and that's sort of how the Japanese approach curry, traditionally.
By the way, it's all over the new Pokemon games, too.
Oh, yeah. So like, the type of curry that you'll get in Japan is basically a sort of funhouse version of the stuff that you'll get in Britain, which means that it's not particularly spicy.
Flavorful.
It is flavorful. It's also pretty sweet, too.
Hmm.
Which, again, that's the British side of it. Now, that's not to say that, like, traditional Indian curry is non-existent in Japan. This stuff's actually been, the regular Indian curry has been recorded in Japan at least before World War II. But this type of stuff, it's usually, traditionally, it's one of those Japanese foods that sort of approaches to how Japan isn't really uber pretentious when it comes to making food. Generally, the traditional way is by using a block of roux that you get at like a grocery store or a gas station or something like that. That's like pre-made, and it usually comes with like a pre-made thing of spices with it, and then you add in stuff like, you know, carrots and potatoes and then whatever protein is, and then you cook it and you put it with rice, and that's basically Japanese curry. It's also kind of considered to be like their equivalent of junk food, even though it's far more nutritious than what we Americans would consider junk food.
Mm.
But yeah, it's, that's basically how they approach curry over there. And of course, because it's Japan, there's regional variances that come with it. So on top of curry rice, you've also got katsukare. Well, they'll put like, you know, pork cutlet on top, you know, the fried one that's...
Oh, yeah.
They'll do it with, like, dorai curry, which is, like, a curry-flavored fried rice. Stuff like that. And then, of course, they got ones that are specific to the type of ingredients. So, like, in Hokkaido, they have sika deer curry. In Okinawa, they have bitter melon curry. Stuff like that. And then, of course, there's curry bread. Which,
yes,
they got a bread for everything over there.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And then we get down to stews, and probably another one that you'll see a lot in Japanese media, which is kurimushichu, or cream stew. This is, again, made sort of similar to the way curry is. It's made with, like, a pre-made block of roux, but it's more cream-based instead of curry-based. And it uses a lot of the similar vegetables, you know, the onions, the carrots, the potatoes, maybe some cabbage will be thrown in there. And usually there'll be some type of meat, usually pork or beef of some kind. It's usually very heavy on the milk side because it's meant to be like a thick, white, creamy broth. And, yeah, again, another kind of, thing that they adopted from us. Cause here, again, you gotta realize, beef was basically not at all consumed in Japan until around the Meiji Restoration. In fact, for most of Japan's history, unless you lived next to like a river or the sea, your diet was primarily vegetarian.
Yeah.
And not like that lacto-octo vegetarian either. I mean like vegan, basically.
No, but aren't they historically, a lot of them are lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
Because there's just not a history of that.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've got probably the other major thing when people think of, like, Japanese food, that is Yoshoku, which is epifurai. fried prawn. You know, tempura.
Yep.
Now, any guesses where they got this from? Portuguese. They got it from the Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
And that's partly because the Portuguese and the Dutch were the earliest Western encounters that they had. And basically what they did is they took the sort of traditional frying techniques that the Portuguese taught them. But what they did is they came up with the idea of basically making a batter that was a bit more, I guess you could say, well, it's a light batter. It's made using ice water and soft wheat flour. So it tends to be a lot sort of silkier and
not super heavy.
Yeah, not super heavy.
Not really bready.
Yeah, and so much so that, you know, when they use it, you can usually see the little chunks of breading that they actually do add into it sort of swimming around in the sort of fried layer that's on there. And, yeah, they learned this from the Portuguese. And, like, yeah, they usually started with, like, the prawns, but basically anything can be tempura.
Oh, yeah.
And they 100% embraced it. So much so that they have found ways, much the same way that we sort of love to deep fry everything over here in the U.S., they will tempura everything in Japan if they can get away with it. They've done tempura ice cream. They've done tempura tofu. They've done tempura, like, taro. They've done, like, tempura ramen. And by that, I mean they literally took, like, a ramen block and... Or they also will just do regular ramen and then serve tempura in it, and it becomes tempura udon. You know?
Yes.
Stuff like that. You got that. Let's see, what else have we got? Spaghetti. I mean, obviously, you would see the Japanese would encounter spaghetti and was like, yeah, we can do it. We can make this work. Noodles have been a part of their diet for generations. So the moment they encountered spaghetti for the first time, they're all like, yeah, we can make this work. Specifically, though, the type of spaghetti they created, which is Napolitan, which take a wild guess what that's supposed to mean. Napolitan.
Really?
So it's Napolitan spaghetti. Except the one they uses, the sauce is usually ketchup-based. It usually involves onions, button mushrooms, green peppers, sausage, bacon, also Tabasco sauce.
Ah, you lost me at ketchup.
Yeah.
Ah.
Hey, I didn't say they were all winners.
No.
Now that I think about it, that's basically what the Filipinos did when they encountered spaghetti. They added ketchup.
And their ketchup might not be as overly sickening sweet as ours is.
Yeah, it's possible. I think theirs is more vinegary.
Yeah.
So
I'm just hoping this doesn't circle back to that whole mushroom ketchup conversation we had several shows back.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the, that used to be the primary thing they made ketchup out of before tomatoes became the standard, but yeah. Then of course after that you got your cutlets, you know, your tonkatsu, your ham katsu, beef katsu. You guys have encountered these before.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it is one of those things that they take like super seriously over there, but it's also like the type of stuff you would get in like a TV dinner over here. So, you know, stuff like that. Then you've got, amarice. Do you guys know what amarice is?
No.
It's, rice omelet. Yeah, take fried rice, they put it into an omelet, top it with ketchup again. and then we've also got, hamburg steak. Which, you know, that's just Salisbury steak.
Yeah.
We also have, Doria, which is, pilaf. You guys have had pilaf before, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is roasted pilaf with bechamel sauce and cheese.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And, also gratin. You know, they're the ones who got the idea, because, you know, gratin, that comes from the French, right?
Yeah.
And so once, you know, French stuff started making its way in, they found out, hey, we can do this, too. And, Fucking hell, do they?
They grotten everything, huh?
Oh, they will grotten ramen.
Oh, my God.
And have.
Oh,
my God.
I'm
pretty sure that there are parts of Japan where that's actually a specialty.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's Yoshoku Japanese food. And that's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Nice.
Yeah. It's funny because it's like some of that stuff is like, yeah, you hit it out of the park. And the other is like, swing and a miss.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And who's our asshole of the week? It's President Donald Trump and the United States military. Well, actually, I don't want to go that far because they only act under his orders.
Yeah.
You know, chief, you know, he is, you know, they call him Commander in Chief for a reason. Which is why it makes it so fucking scary! But yeah, so, for whatever fucking reason, well, actually, this does require a little bit of backstory, because during the week, as anybody finally found out, a bunch of Iraqi Shia militant protesters basically went to our embassy in Baghdad and basically took it over.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. And if you noticed sort of at the flags they were flying, did any guy check or get a good look at any of the flags they were flying?
I did not.
Yeah, if you saw that flag, it was, like, yellow with, like, the green triangle over in the left side of it. Yeah, that's Hezbollah.
Oh.
That's Hezbollah.
Oh.
And for those of you who don't know, Hezbollah is sort of a Shia paramilitary group that kind of, sort of, may take its orders from Iran. Sort of the same way, like how, you know, for the longest time, the Taliban took its orders from us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be important. So just keep that in mind. So whether it was a retaliation for that or just because he got a wild hair up his ass, Donald Trump ordered an airstrike that ended up killing Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani. Now...
That's like killing our Secretary of State or Pence.
Iran ordered an airstrike and it ended up killing Mike Pence. It's
really fucking major.
Yeah, and it's also fucking major because of what he actually did. You see, Qasem Soleimani was the head of Iraq's intelligence agency. And the thing about Iran's intelligence agency is it basically operates as a mirror image of ours. The big difference is that whereas we here intelligence and counterintelligence is divided between like the CIA and special forces, you know, Green Berets, their intelligence agency operates as a combination of the two. And one of the things that they do that is basically the mirror image of what the U.S. does is that they provide funding and training for groups that further Iran's national interest in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if there's any militant group in the Middle East that are Shia militants, it's about a 6-to-1 chance that Iran is involved somehow. And we just fucking poked that bear.
Well, and it may have been something that he didn't have the power to do.
Yeah, because, see, for something like that, he has to notify Congress first.
Right. It's like the 1973 War Powers Act.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that anything that that could put the U.S. forces in harm's way requires prior approval by mm-hmm. Congress.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. So I don't understand, like, what kind of teeth this War Powers Act has.
Yeah.
Well, ideally, we could just hand Trump over to Rouhani and call it a day.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Here's another thing about Soleimani you probably should know. In the brief time span that Iran was actually our ally in the War on Terror, he was actively helping us in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Until, and you know, if George W. Bush had kept his mouth shut, we might still be allies today. Then Bush had to start off with that Axis of Evil bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know how that ends. So, Yeah, Donald Trump and his administration made a colossal fucking mistake last night. And you don't fucking know what it's going to lead to. Before we started the cast, Patrick brought up, like, is this our Franz Ferdinand moment for World War III? And the thing about that is, first of all, you have to remember, when Franz Ferdinand was shot, nobody thought that it was going to escalate as fast as it did and to the state that it did. So much so that there is a period of time between the death of Archduke Ferdinand and the beginning of World War I that's called the July Crisis. That is specifically about the build up the war.
Mm-hmm. And
it was basically a comedy of errors on just about every side that ultimately led into the most destructive conflict that the human race had known up to that point. But the thing you also have to remember is that there was an intertwining quilt of alliances and stuff that existed back then that kind of made that war somewhat inevitable to a point.
I can see how.
Yeah. Whether or not that could actually happen today is unclear. Because the thing about World War I is that it was also the dying age of colonialism, which meant that there were a bunch of colonies and stuff that were kind of dragged into the war itself. And the thing about today is that most colonies, the era of colonialization largely doesn't exist anymore. You know, there is a reason why Africa is now a patchwork of tiny little countries instead of just a quilt of like four or five. Because all of the big powers left. However, World War I is also where the countries of Syria, Iraq, and Iran came into existence. Because the Allied powers were the ones responsible for carving up that whole region. And a lot of the issues that you have in the Middle East now can be directly traced back to that. All the way back to, you know, everything from the current civil war in Syria, the Yugoslav wars, the fucking, you know, the shit that went down in the Balkans, all that shit can be traced back to it. And I would hope, I mean, I would legitimately hope that with the exception of one person, that being our current president, that the majority of the world's leaders are smart enough to remember what would happen if the events that happened in World War I were to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they ended, mostly because unlike the U.S., those people all lost far more people in that war than we ever did.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would hope that the likes of the Grand Ayatollah, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, and, you know, Bashar al-Assad, and all of the people in that region and next to it are smart enough to realize what will happen if they let this get out of control. And that also includes, the European powers too, Germany, Great Britain, France. Because they've got their hands in this pie as well.
Yep.
Just need all the steady hands at the wheel to be that.
And make sure that the one guy who should not be at the wheel keeps himself far, far away from it.
Yeah.
And if my suspicions are correct, that might not be too much longer. But anyway. So, that was our asshole of the week. We're going to see where this story goes. We don't know. By this time next week, we could be in the middle of World War III, or we might not. We don't know. Anyway, but fortunately, we do have our heroes of the week, and our heroes of the week are the government of New Zealand. So after the Christchurch shooting, New Zealand instituted an expansive buyback program for firearms of all kinds. And they announced this week that since that happened, they have actually taken in over 50,000 guns and gun parts in this program.
Yeah, 56,000 guns and 194,000 parts handed over. That ended this past Friday. Or no, the 20th, Friday the 20th. Yeah, and, you know, they have videos of them crushing the weapons. Just basically using simple iron bars, pushing the guns against other iron bars to smash them up. And it's, certainly a great idea that, places like, I don't know, the U.S. should look into. Help out people that need the money. They have more guns than they need, that they should have. You know, do the responsible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, lessen the amount that are out there. Cause there are way too many in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And probably plenty of them that are untraceable as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are never going to get rid of all the guns in the United States.
No, but we can lessen
we can try, and the effort would be worth it.
Yes.
But that goal will never be reached.
There's just so...
There's at least 100 guns for every one human being in the United States right now, and that's not include just, and that's not just including citizens.
There's 100 guns in my family alone,
yeah.
And there's only 2 gun owners.
Yep.
Yeah, too many people that believe in the good guy with a gun myth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, what do you do when you inherit a bunch of guns? You just throw them in the gun safe with the other guns, right?
Pawn shop.
I mean, I guess you could, but they already got 1 million of them.
Yeah, but they'll still buy them.
Yeah, yeah, they will. God damn, they will.
Yeah. I mean, they might make some sort of thing about saying, you know, don't come back or I'll break your fucking legs, but yeah, they'll buy them.
The one pawn shop I went to in Paducah, half of it was guns.
Yep.
And it wasn't small either.
That's all the fucking pawn shops here in Macon.
Yeah.
But anyway. So yeah, good on New Zealand. Wish we had a national program like that over here.
Yeah.
Or at the very least we could do that and then sort of pair it with making sure that everyone who wants to purchase a firearm gets the proper training required. Because that whole thing about a bad guy with a gun can only be stopped with a good guy with a gun. No, you're missing part of it. It's a bad guy can be with a gun can only be stopped by a good guy with a gun who has the proper training.
That's correct.
That thing that happened at that church in Texas, yeah, where the dude went into the church, killed 2 people, and then he was shot by one of the people that were in the church themselves before anything else could happen. Yeah, he's a trained deputy. He wasn't just some rando in the church with a gun on his hip. He actually was a police officer. So, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the point. Okay. With that, all right. Now, it is now time to move on from there to the proper show proper. And amongst other shit that he did, like we just mentioned, we talked about last week, Trump went on another one of his bizarre verbal diarrhea episodes that in this case just so happened to correspond with windmills again.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is one of those moments where you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ. So yeah, let's see. He was doing a weekend speech to young conservatives, West Palm Beach, Florida, near Mar-a-Lago.
Mm-hmm.
Where he said, I never understood wind. You know, I know windmills very much. I like that first sentence. I never understood wind.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody really understands it. Just, it blows.
There's plenty of it between his ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I know windmills very much. They're noisy. They kill the birds. You want to see a bird graveyard? Go under a windmill someday. We don't really, windmills aren't, he's talking about wind turbines, you dumbass.
Mm.
You'll see. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You'll see more birds than you've ever seen in your life.
Okay, like, he's full of shit right there.
I'm pretty sure the birds are capable of flying, between those, 3 or 4, like, on the turbine without getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that don't are the stupid ones who don't get to live. Let's see, he also said they're made in China and Germany mostly, but they're manufactured tremendous, if you're into this, tremendous fumes. gases are spewing into the atmosphere, you know we have a world, right? So the world is tiny compared to the universe, so tremendous, tremendous amount of fumes and everything. You talk about the carbon footprint, fumes are spewing into the air, right? Spewing, whether it's in China, Germany, it's going into the air, it's our air, their air, everything, right? You see all those windmills, they're all different shades of color. They're sort of like, sort of white, but one is like an orange white. It's my favorite color, orange.
Yeah, no fucking kidding.
I mean.
At no point was there a point.
At no point was there a sentence.
No, it's just.
It was a bunch of run-ons.
I mean, I've read Stream of Consciousness done well, you know, like As I Lay Dying.
Or, you know, like James Joyce or something like that. Yeah, but,
This is... God.
That's verbal diarrhea. That is what that is.
That is word association in his mind, linking these things together.
Yeah, and basically this is just, like I said before we started the cast, I am now 99.9% convinced that this is a man who is in the late stages of frontal temporal dementia now. And I gotta be honest, I started to, okay, look, I've always known that Donald Trump is a braying Yankee jackass since forever. We all have. That was his brand. But I think we all started to realize that something was a little off with him right around 2018 when he tried us to getting all slurred and ended up coming out like, thank you and God bless America, like that. And I know people said that, you know, at times, like, maybe, you know, his dentures just slipped or something like that. And I thought, okay, yeah, maybe that's a, you know, that could be an explanation. I mean, the dude is in his 70s.
Well, he can't say origins.
Yeah, but then he started, it started happening even more. And then, like, late last year, his whole, like, and again, it started when he started talking about the windmill shit. Everything started where, like, there were no longer any periods in his sentences. They all started running together. They started all going off into wildly different directions. And keep in mind, he's always been doing that sort of improvisational bullshit.
Yeah, he has.
But then what happened was, a couple nights ago, I saw a video of him, a clip of him that was taken from this very speech that he was making. And he was sort of like in the middle of a speech, and then suddenly you'll notice his body kind of spasmed up and he kind of closed his eyes, and then it's like he completely moved on to a completely another train of thought. And that's when it hit me. This dude is literally suffering from dementia. Because basically what you saw in that clip was his brain shutting down and rebooting. And what I'm saying is, I will go from 99.9 to 100% convinced if in the next few months you suddenly start seeing him walking with a cane. Because what that'll mean is they might try to like write it off as like a golfing accident or something.
Or chewing gum a lot or something.
Yeah, but what that means is he fell. Which is usually the point when everyone else in the family realizes that they can't ignore it anymore.
Yep.
And if that happens, then probably by next year, he's probably going to be wheelchair-bound. And then probably within the next few years, he'll be dead.
Yep.
Because that's how this happens. We've all been watching his mental and state deteriorate over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing his physical health actually drop with it. So, yeah, just watch out for that. So yeah, next time you see him and he's walking with a cane, that's what it is. That is the smoking gun right there. The family knows it, they can't hide it anymore. Don't make that let you think that that'll make you feel bad for Donald Trump though.
No.
He didn't become a racist prick because of dementia. He's always been a racist asshole. But now he also has dementia.
Yep.
Just hope it comes full circle before any more damage can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of, damage, sadly, we, heard this week that Representative John Lewis, revealed that he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, which is basically a death sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, but when it, pancreatic cancer, or cancer in general, once you get to stage four, that's the point of no return.
Yeah.
That's what we heard about from John McCain before he passed away. So, yeah, that's sad. This dude's like an American legend.
Yes.
You know, dude, he was a freedom rider back in the day. Civil rights activist, shed blood for the cause. I mean, that famous image of a dude getting mauled by a German Shepherd, that's him. He's the one getting mauled by the German Shepherd. I just hope that Trump is out of office before he dies.
Yeah.
Because I don't want him to fucking have to go out on a note like that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of politics, we've got yet another person dropping out of the 2020 Democratic race. Julian Castro officially announced the end of his campaign this week.
Yeah.
And I'm like you, I didn't know he was still in it. Yeah. But, yeah.
So what does that put the field to now?
Well, generally speaking, the big, sort of big four are still Bernie Sanders, Liz Warren, Joe Biden. I don't know who. I think the fourth is still Buttigieg.
Yeah.
And I think some of the other outliers are still hanging on there. Like, I know that, I know there are a couple are still there, but.
I know who Yang is.
Yeah, Yang's still in it. I mean, he's pretty much in it for the long haul.
He's trying to buy his way into it.
Trying to buy his way into it. And there's a couple more that I can't think of off the top of my head. But, yeah, it's significantly smaller from where it was, like, this time last year. So, yeah. And we know, like, Kamala Harris isn't there anymore either. She dropped out, I think, during the holidays.
Good.
Yeah. Amy Klobuchar is still there, weirdly enough. I think Marianne Williamson is also still hanging on. I don't know why or how, but she is. But yeah, so, yeah, we're now, you know, it's now 2020. We're now just under 12 months now. So,
yeah, just God.
You will be completely fucking justified in just going a whole day without, going a whole week without looking at any news. I will be, as it'll be the only way to keep your fucking sanity this year.
Well, then you do that and you wake up to hear people, freaking out about the draft and you're like, what?
Yeah.
I have a child. This is not good.
No.
And then you hear Joe Biden talk about, oh, he would be up for having a Republican VP.
Okay, did you watch the clip?
No.
I watched the clip.
I don't have time to listen to
it. No. You do need to watch the clip because it's actually not what you're thinking it is.
It's 2 minutes.
The clip was actually doctored. That isn't actually what he said. So he might be a dumbass, but he's not that big of a dumbass.
Well, he was asked. He would never bring that up on his own. I mean, and he's still trying to do that reach across the aisle, and there are still good people who are Republicans. And we all know that, you know, that mindset, and that's fine. But he's like, and I'm going to get crucified in the press for this in the morning. He was very cognizant of his, you know, of him saying, yeah, I would consider it because there's still good Republicans. He was very cognizant of the possible fallout.
Mm-hmm.
He also sets up the others to dunk on him.
Mm-hmm.
That way, well, it's like, I mean, then just don't answer, you dumbass. Just tell him to go screw up.
You can't just not answer.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think you just call them out for what they're setting you up for and just say, this is what you're going to set me up for.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way you counter that instead of just walking right into exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't walk into it. I mean, he was, you know. I didn't have a problem with the way that he answered it, but I thought that it should have been screened and it shouldn't have been asked. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, like, you're 80 years old. You need to think of this stuff through.
Retire!
Right. Yeah. It's not like he's like, hey, yeah, man, I'm going to pick a Republican vice president because that's awesome. It's not even close. And that's what the sensationalist headlines make it sound like.
Yeah.
But also that's his weakness is wants to make that a part of his image. It's like, well, I'm the guy that's not actively disdaining of the other people.
He wants to be everybody's friend.
And that means he's nobody's friend.
That is very much a downfall.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you're 8 years old, you should have picked a side by now.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on from there. Australia is on fire.
Still.
And I want to put this out because I think people need to understand the scale of this. Australia is roughly the size of the United States. Like the whole island is, the whole continent.
Yep.
And it's basically the whole, like, ring around Australia is in flames right now.
Yep. Taking out a lot of their forest.
Yep. Millions of animals have died.
Yep.
Their wildlife has taken a huge hit.
It's awful.
It's apocalyptic in scale.
Yeah.
There are people that are just trapped on their beaches.
Yep.
Losing entire cities, towns. The amount of real estate they've had burn, more than 5.9 million hectares. Keep in mind, the amounts of the Amazon that burned was 7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that much space is bigger than the countries of Belgium and Haiti combined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think New South Wales has over half of that amount of space burned. And that's where, like, much of their koala population is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really not much more we can add to that except to hope for rain.
Yeah.
They're having, like, record highs in temperatures.
Yeah, because of all the fucking fire.
Well, even before that, I know.
But then again, it is Australia.
They were running like 115 Fahrenheit, like constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be like, that's the average day in the summer in Arizona.
Yeah.
But over there, that's ridiculous.
Right, yeah. And Arizona is not nearly the size of Australia.
No.
New.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, fucking hell.
But anyway, Arizona isn't burning constantly.
Mm-hmm.
California is.
Yeah.
But that's California. And it's only like one portion of the state.
Yep. And no shit can grow in Arizona anyway.
Yeah.
It's a damn desert.
Yeah. Next up in the news, Pope slapped a bitch.
Yeah, he's getting
like a thing in, where was it? Trying to think, where was this located? Let me check.
St. Peter's Square.
It was in New Jersey. It was St. Peter's Square.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, he's out there with the faithful, shaking hands, talking to people. And then this Asian woman shows up and, she can see her on the video. She's like making her, she's like doing the cross, the spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch. Yeah.
And he's ready to leave. He's already turning around.
This woman shows up and she grabs his hand, pulls him forward, trying to talk to him. And he's like, bitch. And
I mean, you can hear it. I mean, you can almost hear him go, ow, because like she jerked his shoulder out of the socket.
Yeah. And
leave the old man alone.
Yeah. And everybody's up his butt about this. Like, he's not supposed to just sit there and let somebody fucking dislocate his shoulder, tear his rotator cuff. Just because he's a goddamn pope.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like, if you respect him so much, respect his boundaries.
Yeah. And she clearly didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna give him a free pass here or anything because I don't like religion, but everybody should stop bagging on him about this. It's what he did in
there's the other good reasons to bag on him. This isn't one of them.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, if a dog reached up and started biting you in the crotch, you're going to smack it with a rolled up newspaper.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be hurt.
Yeah, but,
and especially when, you're a high profile figure like that and somebody grabbing you from behind like that could have a knife or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened to one of his predecessors, so yeah, they take that shit seriously.
Yeah. Rabid fans.
Yeah, and they don't get more rabid than Catholics.
All right.
But anyway, next up, sorry we got, so the Olympics are coming this summer, and they're going to be in Tokyo. Just like Akira predicted. And just like Akira, it also looks like we're on the verge of World War III, except I'm pretty sure that one was like after World War III.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you get the idea. And, Japan Airlines has said that they will offer a free round-trip domestic flight to tourists for the Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to offer 50,000, free round-trip domestic flights to foreign tourists, during the Olympics. So that, cover overseas JAL's mileage program members will stay in Japan during the July-September period next year. They're going to start accepting applications in late February with free tickets to be provided on a first-come, first-served basis. They'll be asked to select Haneda Airport, Osaka International Airport, or Kansai International Airport as a departure point and pick preferred travel dates. They will then be given tickets that will take them to and from a destination to be chosen by JAL from among four candidates. The airline is collaborating on the campaign with the Japan Tourism Agency, Japan National Tourism Organization, and the Nomura Research Institute. We hope this prompts overseas travelers to become fans of Japan, JAL said in a statement.
Mm-hmm.
So you come to Japan around the time of the Olympics, and you might get to apply for this and might get to look at a little extra stuff. Extra tour.
Hmm.
That's kind of, I mean, I can see how they could do that and why it would not fly in America. Because no corporation is going to offer that kind of, you know, basically free handout, I guess.
Yeah, but this is all funded by the government.
Well, yeah.
We want everybody to come here to have as good a time as possible.
Right, and even with they're not government funded things like corporations, everybody owns everybody, like Yamaha and Toyota, they're all intertwined.
Yeah.
So much, they all own stock in each other. Every business in Japan seems to be connected. And so if one of them hurts, they all hurt.
Yeah.
So, and if one of them does really great, like a bunch of hotels, they're all going to do really great.
Yeah.
Kind of a different mindset. I kind of like it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely wouldn't happen over here just because flying with different agencies is just a complete nightmare here. Especially depending on the airport you choose.
Yeah. You're talking about companies. Shōisha and Shokugukan are basically the same company now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they're so intertwined with each other. A bunch of those like conglomerates are specifically like companies that you wouldn't necessarily know that they're actually related to each other because they compete on the surface. But yeah. That's how those conglomerates make all that money. They have all of their individual holdings compete with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you were given this chance, would you take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, man, that'd be awesome.
I might. Oh, I'd take it too.
I'd think about it.
I would consider it. Would have to check what the hotel is that they're going to be sticking us in. Because Japan has its share of ratty-ass hotels, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And things go on in those hotels.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway. All right, next up. So over in Idaho, there's a cave there that 40 years ago, people found they found, like, a corpse. And it, you know, it was, USA Today and their ad-free bullshit.
Oh my God, aren't they awful?
Yeah. But basically they found, they were finally able to like do some DNA testing on this dude, and they found out this dude is actually an outlaw that escaped literally during World War One in 1916.
Yep.
Joseph Henry Lovelace. An outlaw and a murderer who was killed after escaping jail in 1916. He was born in 1870 in Payson, Utah territory. Wasn't even Utah then. To parents who belonged to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
What a shock.
Had one child with his first wife, whose nickname was Hattie, who divorced him in 1904. He had four children with his second wife, goes by the name Agnes, just in case you need to know about, names of that period.
Oy.
He was arrested for bootlegging in 1913 and again in 1914 when he made one of his many escapes by sawing through the jail bars. Just in case you wonder how easy that was back then. This guy would get out multiple times.
The old file in the cake trick.
So, like, his only crime is that he made some booze?
Well,
that he was transporting booze?
In escape in March 16, 1916, Lovelace used a variety of aliases. Managed to stop the train was escorting him to jail and flee. He was recaptured and sent back to jail where he escaped again. May 11th, Lovelace was arrested for the murder of his wife, Agnes. At her funeral, one of her children reportedly said, "Papa never stayed in jail very long and he'll soon be out." Mm. Sure enough, several days later, investigators believe Lovelace cut through the bars of his jail using his saw hidden in his shoe. Once again, he was on the run. Mm. That's going to be fun walking around on a saw. Be like, all right, don't take the wrong step.
Mm.
Or you got a saw on your foot.
Yeah.
He most likely died in May 1916 at age 46 shortly after that escape, but the case is still open because investigators don't know who killed him and dismembered him. It was a headless torso.
Wow.
He was discovered in a burlap sack by police at the Buffalo Cave near Dubois, Idaho in August 1979, setting off a search for the rest of the remains or other artifacts. I think he was lightly buried too. When his limbs were discovered in 1991 by an 11-year-old girl, researchers and students from Idaho State University began searching for his head. Skull was never found. And after trying to identify the body for several years, the team at ISU reached out to the DNA Doe Project for assistance in 2019. A sample of the remains were analyzed by technology company Authrum and DNA Pope Project researchers. Were able to build out a family tree using forensic genealogy and discover the identity of the body. And they confirmed it by law enforcement officials, police records, and by comparison with the living grandchild. In all likelihood, Henry had been murdered and transported to the cave not long after he escaped, making his post-mortem interval, the time between his death and discovery of body, as long as 63 years. The case has been historic in more than one meaning of the word.
This actually happened before Prohibition.
Okay.
Prohibition wasn't ratified until 1920. But there were, like, a bunch of local dry laws that started popping up in the years beforehand.
Also, and the concept of bootlegging is like just transporting alcohol between states.
Yeah.
That was still an issue for a long time.
Keep in mind this was also the Utah territory, so you've also got that going with it.
Yep.
Well, that's where he was born. Not necessarily where he did this. But he was probably transporting it to another state.
Yeah, it's possible.
And like, that concept lasted for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it was the subject of Smokey and the Bandit.
Yep.
Movie is pretty recent, for the most part.
Yeah. Technically, I think it's still illegal, too.
Yeah, probably in some areas.
Yeah.
Like, it's a movie about illegally transporting Coors beer between states.
Because, of course, that would be what they decided to take.
Can't have none of that Colorado beer.
Like Coors.
Can't have none of that Colorado beer.
No. Yeah, but, anyway. Next up. Down in Mexico, way, a bunch of archaeologists have actually managed to uncover a palace that actually may have not only been Mayan, but was actually used by Mayan elites, which means that this was nobility about 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, set in the ancient city of Culuba,
mm-hmm.
K-U-L-U-B-A. The country's National Institute of Anthropology and History said the building measured 6 meters tall, 55 meters long, and 15 meters wide. It's about 20 feet by 180 by 50, or no, 49 feet. Thought to have been inhabited between 600 and 1050 AD. It was found as scientists explored reforesting much of Kaluba to protect it from wind and sun damage. It's a pre-Hispanic site located in Mexico's Yucatan state near Cancun. Had important ties to the Mayan cities of Ekbalam and Chichen Itza, as the civilization ruled large swaths of what is now southern Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, and Honduras. They say the work is just beginning. So they're working on uncovering one of the most voluminous structures on the site, so still work to do there.
Yeah. And the Mayans never really went away. They're still around. It's just, you know, they're like every other native peoples in North America.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hanging around the Amazon and kind of that stuff.
Yeah. Chiapas, that whole area is basically Mayan. But anyway. Next up, Boeing Space Starliner capsule. You might have heard of this recently. It was trying to make a trip to the ISS, the International Space Station. Didn't go so well. But Unfortunately, it landed safely in New Mexico this week. So.
Yeah, and they were able to complete a bunch of test objectives along the way.
Mm-hmm.
They list here on the NASA press release saying a successful launch of the first human-rated United Launch Alliance Atlas V rockets.
Mm-hmm.
Checked out the Starliner propulsion systems, tested space-to-space communications, confirmed Starliner tracker alignments, using its navigation system, tested Starliner's NASA docking system, validated all environment control and life support systems, and completed a positive command uplink between the ISS and Starliner. So at least got some good out of it, but, completed the first land touchdown of a human-rated capsule in U.S. history, Sunday, December 22nd at White Sands Space Harbor, New Mexico. So that's the first time we've had one land on, land.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them land in the water. Settled gently onto its airbags at about 8 a.m., Eastern Time. About 6 a.m. local. In a pre-dawn landing that helped set the stage for future crewed landings at the same site. Landing followed a deorbit burn at 7:23 a.m., separation of the spacecraft's service module, and successful deployment of the 3 main parachutes and 6 airbags. So yeah, while it did not reach its planned orbit and dock to the ISS, it was able to complete a number of other test objectives, so mostly good. Not quite there yet, but they're on the way.
Yeah, so, yeah.
They can't figure out airplanes, but they can figure out space for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of space, Christina Koch, a NASA astronaut, actually broke the record this week for the single longest space flight by a woman.
Yeah, she's been on space for 289 days.
Mm-hmm.
As of this past Saturday, still plan to be there for another 2 more months. So she's going to go past it for a bit. She'll remain until February 2020, falling just shy of the longest single space flight by a NASA astronaut, which is 340, set by Scott Kelly. That's it for the most part. She and Jessica Mayer conducted the first all-female spacewalk. That's the one where Trump talk to them about nonsense. Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's good stuff.
All right. Next up. Of course, Ivanka Trump, daughter of President Donald Trump, will be at the, Consumer Electronics Show 2020 as a keynote speaker. I don't know why.
She's gonna join a keynote discussion on jobs and the future of work with Gary Shapiro, President and CEO of the Consumer Technology Association, which produces CES. It'll discuss employer-led strategies to reskill workers, create apprenticeships, and develop K-12 K-12 STEM education programs. Let's see. Oh, okay, this is what she said here. CES has consistently proven to be one of the most influential technology events in the world, and I'm excited to join this year for a substantive discussion on how the government is working with private sector leaders to ensure American students and workers are equipped to thrive in the modern digital economy. Which, no, she doesn't know any of that stuff. She is a leech on her father's government.
Which was already pretty leechy to begin with.
That's her whole career. Is getting positions because of who her dad is. And now they're trying to, essentially politicizing CES.
With that out of the way, let's then move on to this next story. Segway. We all know Segway. And do you remember, like, the couple of years leading up to the reveal of the Segway, how much they hyped it?
Yeah.
Like it was going to completely revolutionize transportation. And it kind of ended up being more of a novelty than anything.
And then the guy who invented it, like, drove off of a cliff on accident or some shit.
Wouldn't doubt it. Well, anyway, that company now has a new vehicle. It's an egg-shaped wheelchair.
Where have we seen this before?
Let me see. Oh, goodness. What could this be? What could this be? What could this look like?
Professor X's chair.
Yep.
It's also the fatty carts from Idiocracy, which, again, people, was not supposed to become a documentary.
Yeah, there's also the floating carts that or the floating chairs that the people in WALL-E use.
Maybe it was WALL-E I'm thinking of. Yeah, thank you.
Honestly, I'm looking at this, and all this really looks like is one of those electric-powered wheelchairs.
It does. I mean, like, if you have an autoimmune disease and you're gonna end up in a wheelchair and you don't want to look totally crappy, I mean, fuck yeah, why not?
Yeah, this thing's called the S-Pod.
Yeah.
It's controlled using a little joystick on the right side of the seat. It has the same self-balancing technology they use in their other stuff. Two wheels. It has three small ones that are for, I think, like just transportation to move around when not in use. They say it was inspired by the gyrosphere from Jurassic World, which is weird. But it can get up to about 24 miles per hour.
Oh, my God. That could be
Let's see, they're going to debut in the third quarter of 2020, plans to sell them to the public after that, possibly in 2021. No word on price. But yeah.
Oh, bad.
But, you know, for everybody who is saying, oh, God, these are going to be going down the aisle at Walmart, check out the width on it.
Yeah, you can't fit that into an aisle at Walmart.
And you can't fit the people who are riding those into
that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, when you've got them riding in the back seat of, or in, not in the back seat, in the bed of their husband's pickup, she's not going into that. Oh, yeah, Mayfield, Kentucky?
Jesus.
Yeah. They can't.
Seems like they're suggesting this would be more for campuses, theme parks, airports, and maybe like small cities.
Yeah, I could see that being really helpful for somebody who's just completely pooped at Disney and needs to just get back to the tram or something.
Or like a paraplegic or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I think they're already going to have their own rig though.
Yeah, those would be like subsidized too.
Yeah.
It seems more like the touristy kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going to be for people who permanently need to use it because they won't have the right locking mechanisms for vans and whatnot for other transportation on the road.
Yeah, but imagine people in like Jurassic World using these things going out in the fields with dinosaurs.
It's like, oh my God, I'm going top speed. The dinosaur's just like, what is this shit, Karen? I'm going to eat you right now. You're in an egg. This is a kid egg for me.
Alright. And now we get to the entertainment portion of the program. First and foremost, Ryan Reynolds confirmed what we all knew. There's gonna be a third Deadpool movie.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. Disney wasn't going to fuck that up.
Nope.
Nope. But yeah, that's gonna be fun to see how they approach this, cause eventually when they get the X-Men into the MCU, they can just have Deadpool be the one character that knows about the Fox, Disney merger.
Mm-hmm.
And gets to make fun of that whole thing.
That'll be great.
Yep. Let's see. Next up, we also, had Netflix. They previewed what their 2020 slate of movies is gonna be. Let's, see what we got here.
Yeah, they did this over Twitter, basically. But, they posted a big thread on it. So they, let's see, there's The Old Guard from director Gina Prince-Bythewood.
Mm-hmm.
Charlize Theron and Kiki Lane lead a covert group of immortal mercenaries. Must fight to keep their team together when they discover the existence of a new immortal and their extraordinary abilities are exposed. Let's see, Mank from David Fincher. Oh, centers around the writing of Citizen Kane. Okay, I think we've heard about that one before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Rebecca from director Ben Wheatley. Adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's novel. Adapted by Hitchcock in 1940.
Yep.
A newly married young woman who finds herself battling the shadow of her husband's dead first wife.
Mm-hmm.
DA 5 Bloods, latest Spike Lee movie. Those four African-American vets who return to Vietnam, searching for the remains of their fallen squad leader. The Promise of Buried Treasure. Okay, it's got Chadwick Boseman, Paul Walter Hauser, Norm Lewis, Delroy Lindo, and Jonathan Majors.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of anything, so Road Trip becomes a twisted mix of palpable tension, psychological frailty, and sheer terror in the latest from Charlie Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Dick Johnson is dead. It's a vetted portrait, director Kirsten Johnson of camera person fame. Seeks a way to keep her 86-year-old father alive forever by staging fantasies of death and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's weird enough.
Mm. Eh, sounds like they got some interesting...
Yeah, there's tips. Some more stuff in here, too, in the actual thread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got a link to that in the show notes.
Eurovision. Yeah, we'll link to it. Yeah, they got a movie based on Eurovision. It's a Will Ferrell movie. I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, it would have to be, because that thing is a joke.
Let's see. There's a Tyler Perry movie. A Fall from
Grace. There's always a Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like that kind of Tyler Perry movie. It's a thriller. Featuring Crystal Fox. Some other
He's actually going out of his...
usual?
Yeah, disheartened woman restored by new romance discovers a relationship is full of secrets, and her vulnerable side quickly turns violent.
No, that's still very much a Tyler Perry movie.
Okay. Let's see. Alice Wu has a movie, the half of it. Shy sorority student Ellie is hired by sweet and inarticulate Jack Paul and needs help wooing the most popular girl in school, but they fall for each other. Shocker. Okay, there's some decent stuff here. There's The Prom from Ryan Murphy. Mm-hmm. Directs the story of a lesbian teenager who's banned from attending the big dance with her girlfriend.
Just based on a true story.
Yeah, prompts a cast of Broadway eccentrics to descend on her small Indiana town to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Has the Meryl Streep, James Corden, and Nicole Kidman in it.
Hmm.
Over the Moon, animation icon Glenn Keane makes his feature directorial debut in his musical adventure about a girl who builds a rocket ship to travel to the moon in order to prove to her father that a legendary moon goddess really exists. There's some interesting stuff in here.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just release and we're like, oh, okay, I'll check this out.
Alright. Okie dokie then.
Yeah,
sounds good.
There's quite a bit in this.
Yeah, sounds like we got some quality stuff there.
Yeah.
And finally, last thing we got for the night, we got a trailer for the sequel to A Quiet Place.
Yeah, and this one looks interesting. It's like a, it said during the, like, initial attack of the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Emily Blunt and her, two kids are sort of reacting to it and find a place to at least lay down for a bit and then decide they want to help others. It's a little bit more action-y in there.
Yeah. That's it. Is it the same director?
Yeah.
All right.
John Krasinski. It's out March 20th, so pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alrighty then. I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. Ah, and we did it all without Phil. Phil, you're fired.
Well, I hope he enjoys it while he edits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, seriously, Phil.
That was good medicine.
Yes, it's a good medicine. Anyway, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any podcast aggregator you can possibly think of. There's a good 6-to-1 chance that we're in there. And if we're not, wait a few minutes. We'll be there. We're kind of like dominoes that way. But, you know, we don't suck. Hey, she's a Chicago girl. She knows what I'm talking about.
Dominoes suck so much ass.
Exactly.
So much ass.
So, with that being said, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Salmon, and Chris Loach. Good night, sleep tight. Hopefully you won't wake up in nuclear fire.